the 10 years of Macromedia Flash from Adobe Online Seminar. This is a one-hour recorded event. I'll now turn the call over to Kevin Lynch from Adobe.
All right. Thank you all for joining us here today. We're really excited to be celebrating the 10th anniversary of Flash. And we have here today several folks who have been involved in Flash for quite a while. Myself, I've been at Macromedia and now Adobe for 10 years. So I've seen Flash grow from the early days of animation to applications today. We also have Mike Downey, who's the Senior Product Manager working on Flash currently on Flash Authoring Tool. And Mike Chambers, a Senior Product Manager who has worked on Flash for quite a long time in developer relations and is currently working on a new project codenamed Apollo. And Eric Whitman, who also has been working on Flash since the early days and is currently a Director of Business Development in Europe. So we're going to be talking a little bit here about the history of Flash, how it evolved. We're really interested in getting questions from all of you and talking about what you'd like to ask about. We also are working on a little website to celebrate Flash's history and its future, and that's coming up later today. And it's a great interactive piece that really highlights some wonderful work that everyone in the community has been doing over the past 10 years, and I think is a really good example of how Flash has evolved through that whole period of time. Just to want to do a quick update on the reach of Flash. So over the past 10 years, we went from, of course, having no reach with the Flash player, 0%, to having really incredible reach today with about 98% of people on the web being able to see Flash content. And we're actually able to update Flash very quickly. Excuse me. If you look at Flash Player 7, we were able to get distribution of Flash Player 7 to most people on the web in about a year. And Flash Player 8, which we introduced just late last year, has had incredible adoption, much, much faster distribution than we've ever seen before with the Flash player. And you can see here that that curve reached 85% of people on the web with Flash Player 8. And that happened in only 9 months. So we have an incredible ability not only to reach everyone on the web here with this technology and enable you to create great work on it, but we can also add new functionality, new capabilities, and you can start using them incredibly a short period of time. So we've just released Flash Player 9 a few weeks ago, and our projection for Flash Player 9 adoption is, we think, to be even a little bit faster than Flash Player 8, and our estimate is that within 3 months, we expect to have over 50% of people on the web having updated to Flash Player 9. And early indications of Flash Player 9 on our site is definitely heading in this direction. So we thought we would take you through a few different phases of Flash so we could focus our discussion on different periods of time. So we thought we'd start, of course, at the early days. And Mike Downey is going to help us work through the questions here and point some of the questions to each of us so we can discuss. Mike?
Great. Thanks, Kevin. I thought it would be nice to start by hearing a little bit about how all of this happened back in that 96 time frame. I know Kevin, I think, was the only one of us that was actually here at the time that was involved in bringing this great technology from Future Wave Technologies, the technology that John Gay and Robert Tatsumi worked on. So I thought maybe Kevin could give us a little bit of background on how all of that came about. Where did we first hear about Future Flash, Kevin?
Well, we first started seeing Flash at the time called Future Flash from Future Wave Software being used on Disney and MSN websites. And it was quite striking. I mean, it was very simple at the time. It was just simple animation. They did have some buttons. And we saw that as a very promising technology for what could be done for interactive media on the web. And, of course, at Macromedia at the time, we have lots of experience with multimedia technologies, you know, having led the CD-ROM revolution and really sparked the multimedia revolution in the industry, and saw the move to the web as critical for this. And we were working on a number of technologies ourselves at that time, but we thought, hey, this is a really great technology. It's designed really well for the web. The low bandwidth, small size, fast display was really the right characteristics for the web. And then the two fellows who are working on it, John Gay and Robert Tatsumi, I knew of John Gay from a long time before. I was an early Macintosh developer in the 80s. In 84, I was making Mac software. John Gay was also doing that. We both were making games. And I knew of John's game. It was called Dark Castle, which is an incredibly fun game. And I was actually more thrilled to be getting the guy who wrote Dark Castle initially than I was necessarily to get Flash. Flash was cool, too. But getting John and having him join our team was amazing. And so he and Robert really did a great job getting that going. And then we grew that team really from two people to what it is today. And the challenge there was to do that without losing its soul, you know, keeping its small size and keeping its lightness and its incredible focus on interactive media on the web. And I think we've delivered on that over the years.
So there's a question regarding director. How did director influence Flash as we first got it started? And actually, on top of that also, I know Flash was just John and Robert initially. How do we put the team together, and what was the influence the director had early on?
Sure. Well, it's interesting. The Flash and director teams were on the same floor in the engineering building at Macromedia, but they didn't really have that much interaction. It's surprising. They really were being developed on their own independently, very much different design centers. Shockwave, of course, was coming from the heritage of Director and had a lot of existing functionality that they were moving onto the web, which we did with Shockwave, and it's a great environment for doing the development you do with Director and delivering it on the web. Very successful transition. But Flash was really designed from a different perspective of, you know, let's be very web-centric from the beginning, and did not have the historical set of features that Director did. So very, very different problem to solve. So they both worked on it individually. We had a exchange of team members across the team. So I remember one of the Director engineering team members went over to Flash. It was very controversial at the time. You know, you're switching to the other side. You're going from Director to Flash. But that connection technically happened very early. And that was Slavik, who went on to work on Breeze that we're using right now and a bunch of other technologies. So, and so those technologies both evolved independently. We learned a lot, of course, from them in terms of the need for a small size. We'll talk about ActionScript in a minute, but the language we did in Director really informed our language decisions that we did in Flash as well.
So, Eric, how early did you join the Flash project? I know you were one of the early product managers working on Flash.
Yeah, so I came on during Flash 2. So right after we had basically, as the slide shows here, taken a sticker and put it on the Future Flash Animator box, which became Flash 1.0. That was the only feature Macromedia really added to the FutureWave product.
Great. So that kind of takes us into the first, I think, big milestone in the history of Flash that Kevin just mentioned. Let's talk a bit about ActionScript. Eric, when we decided to put a scripting element into the Flash technology, how did that all come about?
Well, you know, Flash originally had a very rudimentary, I wouldn't even call it a scripting language, but it was an interactivity mechanism that we called Actions, and that enabled you to add basic elements of interactivity, things like, you know, go to a web page or go to a different part of the Flash movie. And what we found was that up until Flash 4, people were doing some very, very exceptional things like user interfaces and games without it being a full-blown scripting language. And, you know, we actually found that there were developers that were creating tools in which you could actually write ActionScript in a text editor, copy it into the clipboard, and then run this application that would convert it to the clipboard format that Flash actually remembered, and then would paste that into Flash. So it was a crazy process, frankly, and developers did some amazing things, and I recognize some names actually in the attendee list. So thank you for putting up with us for those years. And then at that point, that's when we began looking into adding a full-blown scripting language, what eventually became ActionScript.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember those days. There's actually a question of how big Macromedia was at that time. And when we were bringing Flash into Macromedia at that time, I think we were about 300 people in total size of the company, maybe 350 when I joined at that time. And it was a pretty small company. And, of course, on Flash we had two people. There was actually no QA team, no test team on Flash initially. It was just two engineers. I remember I asked John, like, well, what did you do in terms of testing? He's like, well, we just didn't put any bugs in. But I think, you know, we just didn't know some of the bugs, of course. But anyway, we now have a QA team on Flash. Today, Macromedia and Adobe together are about 5,000 people.
Yeah, I remember this is before I was with Macromedia at the time. I was doing Flash 3 development, and we'd have to do really complex scripting stuff, do everything in the timeline because there's no scripting. And then Flash syntax came out in ActionScript in Flash 4, and something that would take me 2 days to do before now took maybe half a day. And then finally ActionScript came out, And that came down to like 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So we went from 2 days to 2 minutes, you know, just because of the evolution of the scripting language.
Yeah, we almost invented a new scripting language at that time, because Flash was starting to evolve from actions to action script, which, you know, was the scripting of those actions. And with Director, we had invented our own language called Lingo, which was very popular in the Director community, a very powerful language, but very specific to Director. There wasn't a large community of people beyond that were using it. It was just Director. And so we had been working, of course, on other web technologies at that time. I was working on Dreamweaver, and we were very familiar with HTML and JavaScript because of that. And so what we started to do was I was evangelizing JavaScript within the company as the lingo of the web, to get a lot of support for using that inside of our other interactive media tools like Flash. And so that's what we did. We basically have standardized on JavaScript, though it's really the ECMA standard. There's a European standards body that leads something called ECMAScript. JavaScript is according to that standard, as well as ActionScript. They're the same standard languages. And actually in Director now, we also, it took us a few years, but we incorporated the same scripting support in Director, so you have a choice of Lingo or JavaScript. So we've really introduced this language as the primary scripting language across the product line, and I think that's also enabled people to move easily between Flash and web development. It's the same community of technology.
Kevin, there's a lot of questions about Director. How did we decide what features to put in Director versus Flash over the years?
Each team put features in that were appropriate for their customer base. So, you know, they evolved very much independently and did whatever they needed to do to move forward. And so in Director, there was a lot of experimentation with 3D, of course, really driven by the community who wanted to create more like 3D games and interactive pieces like that. So a whole 3D engine got put in there. And to date, we, of course, haven't done that with Flash. But with Flash, you know, we did some other features. So it was really driven by customers.
There's another question. Has the introduction of ActionScript minimized the use of the timeline? Will it eventually cancel it out? I'll respond to that one. I think ActionScript has just really added a significant amount of capabilities to what you can do with Flash, but by no means does it replace or make the timeline not necessary. The nice thing about Flash as to where it's gotten today is that it caters to a lot of different types of users, depending on what type of content you want to create and the type of user you are, whether you're a more code-centric developer or more of a visual designer. The product gives you those capabilities to create the same type of content based on what your skill set is. So we actually have lots of great plans for the timeline going forward, and it's definitely not going to go away. Kevin, there's another question in here. What does SWF actually stand for? Can we get an official answer on SWF?
Which official answer?
Mystery wrapped in a corn gum. Yeah, basically we had this interesting period of branding at Macromedia where we decided all of the tools that output things for the web should have a common brand. And so actually at that time we called it All Shockwave. So it was Shockwave Director, Shockwave Flash, Shockwave Freehand, Shockwave Authorware. We had Shockwave for all of our tools that went to the web, and even Shockwave X-Res, which was a painting program at the time. And, of course, many of those didn't become very popular other than Shockwave and Flash. And what we found was, of course, that branding was confusing in calling them all Shockwave, and so we went back to calling Shockwave Shockwave and Flash Flash. But in that period of time, we picked the file format, and we named it. So those three letters were picked during that period of time. So originally stood for Shockwave Flash, but now we say it stands for Small Web Format. So you can fill in your own meaning for Swift.
Yeah, I think the community's kind of driven that one, even just calling it Swifts.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and move on to one of the next major milestones for Flash, and that is when we introduced video support into the technology. That happened with Flash version 6. And it was a pretty big deal. When we introduced Flash Video, was it you and a bunch of other executives of the company saying, let's create this great video technology and compete with Microsoft and all these other great video technologies? How did all of that come about? How did we get video in there?
That's a good question. I remember when it started. We have these offsites sometimes to brainstorm where we're going in the future. And at those, we will have different experiments people will show or ideas they have, things like that. And actually, John had taken a sabbatical. And sabbatical is where you're not supposed to work for a while. You go off and travel or have some hobbies or something. What John did in his sabbatical was he decided he was going to try to put video into the Flash player just as a fun experiment. And not only put video in, but have it be two-way live video. And so at this little brainstorm that offsite we had, John came and he was able to show with his laptop computer. He opened it up, hooked it up to the display, and he showed Flash running with video in it and actually hooked up to a camera back in his apartment so we could actually look across the net into his – we actually had a webcam feed running into the Flash player. So it was live two-way video. So our initial approach with video was not just to play back pre-recorded content. It was to enable a two-way rich communication over the Internet, audio and video. And it's funny that, you know, playing back pre-recorded stuff is just kind of a side effect of what we were trying to do really with video and Flash. And originally it was put together as a series of JPEGs that got displayed really fast. That's how that was prototyped. But then since then we've got some really great video codecs that I think have really positioned us as the best platform with Flash for video on the web. And we really have embraced, of course, pre-recorded content as one of the main capabilities of the Flash player today, in addition to the live communication that we do through things like Breeze now.
Right. Yeah, I've been asked a lot lately, as I've been talking with people about the 10-year anniversary of Flash, the topic of YouTube keeps coming up. Obviously, this is a huge phenomenon on the web, and, of course, YouTube is using Flash technology for playing back the video. There's a question. By the way, everyone feel free to please submit questions as we go, and we'll address them as they're relevant to the topic we're focused on. But there's a question about using video in Flash. The Flash authoring tool gives you a lot of capabilities for importing existing video or taking video from one of the other video products like After Effects or Premiere and encoding that to a Flash format, and then wrapping that in a video player and creating more of a custom dynamic interface around that content, all within the Flash authoring tool. So if you do want to do Flash video, that is all made possible in the Flash authoring tool, which is currently Flash Professional 8. And that's what you can use to create simple video playback pods like what you see with YouTube, but also you see a screenshot on the slide right here referring to one of, I know it's one of my favorite sites, I think we've all talked about this one a lot over the years, is the Red Bull Copilot site, which takes video a little bit further and focuses more on interactivity mixed with video, so you can control different camera angles while you're experiencing one of the different topics that they focus on. There's another question. Which version of the Flash player really took off? At what point, I'll ask this one to Eric. At what point in the history of Flash did it really hit that kind of critical mass and the player just really, really took off?
I would say that would be Flash 4. I mean, Flash Player 4 was really when we started getting mass distribution with Netscape, with Microsoft IE, and also with AOL. And AOL was fairly big at the time. And that's when you really started to see people putting Flash content also on their homepage. You know, it wasn't just destination content. It was now at the forefront on people's homepages, and that was forcing more usage and ensuring more people actually had the player installed.
Yeah, I think that's right. That's also when we published the Swift format. You know, when we started including the Flash player with Netscape initially, part of that deal with Netscape was that we opened the format to anyone to author to. So just like anyone can target HTML with whatever tools that they want, we wanted to accomplish the same thing with Flash. And so, of course, we make a great tool for authoring Flash, but we wanted to enable anyone to do that. And there are over 100 different software developers now who have created tools to output to Swift today. I remember that time when we started getting adoption, we ran this little campaign that said 100 million served when we got 100 million Flash players out there. And we did get a letter from McDonald's asking us to stop. Yeah.
So today, I think you mentioned this earlier on, Kevin. How does the player penetration break down across all of the browsers?
Well, it's basically included with the OSs that people distribute today. So Flash Player is included with Microsoft Windows currently, as well as OS 10, and as well as with browsers. So it's really widely distributed. And initially, that was the key to getting it out there, was including it with those browsers and those operating systems. But today, really, the prime distribution mechanism is is people making content that pulls the Flash Player install. So you go to a website and it says, hey, in order to see this, you need Flash Player 8. That's the primary way that people are getting Flash Player. A very small percent of people are getting it through other means. So it's really driven by the community. I think the success of Flash is not just an Adobe Macromedia success. It's really a success of the Flash community driving this and pushing it in directions that we didn't even imagine, and creating the content that has actually gotten the distribution that we see today.
So someone also asked, how did Macromedia convince Microsoft to bundle the Flash Player early on?
Well, that happened pretty quickly as we did the deal with Netscape. We actually had to pay Netscape a lot of money to put the Flash Player into their browser, and actually had to promise to keep it only 150K in size, too. Microsoft called us a couple weeks after that and said, hey, we saw you included that with Netscape, and obviously they were trying to compete heavily with Netscape at that time on the browser market, and they wanted to include it in Internet Explorer, and so we did that. We didn't have to pay them money to do that. And suddenly we had Flash in both the major browsers. And that led to inclusion in Windows OS over time itself as, many groups within Microsoft found Flash to be useful in their work and many customers found it to be useful. So that's what led to its inclusion in the operating system. But today, again, it's primarily driven through content on the web, updating the Flash Player.
So let's move on to our next topic. This is a big one. Mobile. So we've been doing a lot of work over the last few years to extend Flash beyond the player in the browser and in a few different directions. I think mobile is one of the big ones. What first sparked the idea to even try and get Flash running on a phone?
Well, I mean, I can pick this one up. Originally, just like many of the features and functionality that we have in Flash today, it was driven by a customer. In this case, NTT Docomo of Japan came to us and said, we want Flash on our phones because we've seen what the community, the developer community, and the content community looks like in Japan, and we want that content on our handsets. So it was a customer-driven request. And now, it's very difficult to find a new phone, a new mid and high-end phone in the Japanese market that doesn't already have Flash Lite, which is the reduced profile of the Flash Player, on that handset.
There's a related question. What is the biggest issue facing getting Flash Lite out there as pervasive as it is in the browser today?
I think from a mobile perspective, looking at the European market, which is the market I've been focusing on, it's really in the desktop space. We only had to worry about a couple different browser varieties and made it to ensure that we're compatible on a myriad of operating system flavors. In the mobile space, that problem is times 20. And so you have more browsers, you have more usages, whether it's Flash as a part of a mobile browser or as standalone content. And I think because of that level of fragmentation, it's very difficult to get the same level of penetration that you have on the desktop today. And so the approach is a little bit different. Instead of just, trying to work with every handset manufacturer to get it pre-installed, we also have to work with a number of other people in the mobile ecosystem, folks like content developers, the operators themselves. What we're finding is that this is just like the Japanese and now the U.S. market with our announcement with Verizon. It's a very operator-driven discussion. The operators have a lot of influence over what technology does or does not get adopted.
So you mentioned that recent deal with Verizon. We have another question. Why is Flash on mobile devices so big in Japan, but it's not big in the U.S.? Why is Japan ahead of the curve there?
Well, I think Japan has always been ahead of the curve when it comes to mobile. I mean, interestingly enough, unlike, I think, computer technology in general, where it starts normally in North America and it moves, it generally moves its way east, now it's in the mobile space, it's generally Japan and Korea, and it moves its way west. And so the U.S., in many cases, has actually been the laggard in adoption of, especially when it comes to richer technologies on mobile handsets. And I think that's just the way it is. It's the way it has been historically. But we'll see, if this opportunity with Verizon will actually change that a little bit.
There was another question about creating content for these mobile devices. Somebody asked how does that happen. We actually have, in the latest version of the Flash authoring tool, Flash Professional 8, we've done a lot of work to both support all of our different mobile profiles as player targets when you publish your content, which is new in Flash Professional 8. And we've also added a new mobile emulator to the tool. So when you create mobile Flash content and you go to test the content in Flash to see how it'll work, instead of it just playing in the regular test movie window, now it actually launches into an emulator that allows you to pick different device skins that are set to different screen resolutions and really interact with the content more like you would on a device. So all of the buttons on the device, for example, are all fully interactive in the emulator experience. So there's a lot of new things that we put in there to try and make it easier for you to deliver to such a different format with a different type of interactivity, which is these handsets.
This is a major shift in the industry, too, and this is something that we were looking at in terms of our investment in making Flash work on all these different mobile phones and consumer electronics devices, is that if you look at the number of PCs, personal computers, sold every year that are connected to the web, of course, and the number of mobile devices that are connected to the web, the curves have already crossed. There's actually more mobile devices sold every year than personal computers connected to the web. So in terms of the target audience or people who are using devices to look at interactive media, these mobile devices and consumer electronics are already selling more than personal computers, and the installed base is now crossing over. So the number of these that people are browsing the web with or interacting with content on are actually exceeding the number of PCs. So if you're currently a developer creating content for personal computers, you should start thinking about how do you make that content work on a smaller form factor with a phone UI or on a set-top box. This is really the new frontier for us to all bring this great experience that we've worked on personal computers to the rest of the world of devices. And we're working our hardest to get the Flash Player on all of these things. We've had some great success with our early partnerships in Japan and Europe, and that's starting to come to the U.S. now with the partnership we formed here to get Flash Light out on devices here. So around the world, you'll be able to start really creating these new experiences. So I encourage you to take a look at it if you haven't already started to investigate mobile in your work. It's a great new area to play in.
Yeah, somebody asked about Nokia and our relationship with Nokia. They actually participated in our Max conference last year and talked about how they're excited about getting Flash on the devices. How is our relationship with Nokia going, and do we actually have Flash Player out there on some of the devices, those Nokia devices now?
Yeah, so our relationship with Nokia is fantastic. This year, I think publicly they've announced that they will have over 20 handsets that will be shipping with Flash Light, primarily Flash Light 1.1, pre-installed on those handsets. And with that, there will also be some content from folks like Smashing Ideas that will actually be pre-installed on those handsets. And then, Nokia actually has a developer forum in which developers can go to. They can see how to actually develop content for those handsets that are in market, and then specifically what operators and content aggregators allow you to distribute that content. So this 2006 is going to be a banner year for Flash Lite in the mobile ecosystem on a much broader basis than what we've seen in the past.
Somebody else asked about examples of this mobile Flash content, and we want to let you know that you can go to our website, to the Mobile Center on our website. It's easy to find from our homepage, and we have a very large gallery that actually shows a lot of the sample content, and we have a lot of tech notes and tutorials on how to create content using Flash Professional 8. And also, we have a full list of the devices that support Flash Lite today.
Yeah, the Flash authoring tool has this great feature where you can actually run a simulation of a bunch of different phones. So you're creating content. You can actually see the phone on your screen and press its buttons with your mouse like you're using the phone in real life and see that interact with the content you're developing. And you can keep switching the shells of those phones. And as new ones come out, it's extensible. So you can add like new Samsung phones or new Nokia phones or whatever to your authoring environment. So it's becoming a much better process for developing these things too, where in the very early days, it was quite difficult. It's becoming much easier now.
There's another question, which I've heard a lot. Is there any chance of Flash on an iPod in the future?
That's up to Apple.
Good answer.
But Flash in the mobile space, or Flash Lite, I should say, just isn't about mobile phones. It's also about the broader consumer electronics market. So Flash has been playing, there's Flash shipping today in the market on personal media players. such as the iRiver device. There are also set-top boxes that are shipping with Flash Lite. There are game machines like the Leapster. There are cameras like the Kodak camera that actually has Flash on it and is using it for the user interface of the device. So it's a very broad market, and it's great for developers because, hey, you know, it's just a broader market that you can apply these existing Flash skills you have today and get into other areas of the business.
Someone else asked about the Nokia developer site. I know, Eric, there's Nokia actually put together a program that also supports people creating Flash content. And I think they're working on something to help them distribute it. Do you know any of the details on that?
I don't have anything offhand. But if you go to the adobe.com/mobile site, there's a link to the Nokia Developer Center, and there's
great.
A lot of information up there for folks.
Great. Also, someone had a question about Flash Lite 2 and how it relates to the different hardware requirements on the phones. The question is hardware specifically the main barrier to Flash Lite running on a lower end and more common phone?
Yeah, I mean Flash Lite 2 definitely, because that version of Flash Lite actually includes what's basically the equivalent of ActionScript, the ActionScript that's running in Flash Player 7, so you know ActionScript 2, and because of that, you know, there are a number of additional hardware requirements that we have. Some of it's memory utilization, some of it's actual footprint on the device itself, and the other is, of course, the CPU. So in general, we require about an ARM 9-based device versus an ARM 7 device for Flash Lite 1.1. And so I think that's fundamentally the baseline requirements and differences.
Yeah, I think a really critical item here with mobile and Flash is we've been very focused on making it be compatible across a wide number of different devices. So if you're using the Flash authoring tool and you make a SWIFT and you deploy it to a phone, it will use the same runtime on these different devices. So the same scripting language, the same graphics rendering, so it's reliable. Where other technologies have tried to do this across phones and had many different implementations, so you have to redo your content or your application, you know, maybe even 100 times to make it work on a wide range of phones. With Flash, you don't have to do that. That's really core to Flash, as it has been on the PC, same on mobile. So our long-term plan here is to continue that continuity and get it as consistent as we can across devices and PCs. And today we're at basically kind of Flash Player 7 level of capability on devices with ActionScript 2 and the graphics rendering. And we'll, of course, be moving that forward, and processing power and memory will keep getting cheaper and faster, and that will of course, help level it a bit, too, over time.
Yeah, the other interesting component that people, you know, take for granted often is the fact that, you know, these devices have batteries, and you have to worry, and you have to design your content in a way where it doesn't consume a lot of battery life.
Yeah.
It's not a problem that we had to worry about in the desktop space, and it's a big problem in the mobile and CE space.
Yeah, we should add a battery meter to the Flash authoring tool. You know, your animation's running 20 frames per second. You're using X watts per minute.
Stay tuned. We have really crazy ideas.
But wait, there's more.
Yes. Actually, somebody did ask about when's the next version of Flash coming. And, of course, we haven't been specific about the next release, but I'll tell you that it won't be until next year, and it'll actually be a while. So somebody asked, should I wait to buy Flash now? And the plan is to release the next version of the Flash authoring tool next year, so it won't be anytime soon. But that's because we have really great stuff in store, working on great things that not only relate to mobile, but a whole variety of other features.
So on that note, let's move on to our next major topic, which is one of my favorite acronyms that I've been completely immersed in over the last few years, the RIA, Rich Internet Applications. This was a big deal at Macromedia. I remember a few years ago, everything we talked about used this RIA term, I think we did coin. I think
we
that we really should be able to claim responsibility for coining RIA. So, Kevin, where did this RIA thing come from, and what are we doing with this in the future?
Sure. Well, this was a really exciting change for Flash because it was something that was driven by the community. Flash was obviously originally used for animations. What we started seeing people do, though, was creating full-blown applications with this. And at the time, this was like Flash 5. We didn't support components even, like scroll bars or grid controls and things like that. So if you wanted to make a scrolling list as a Flash developer, you had to actually build your own scroll bar, draw the little arrows yourself with the drawing tool, write the ActionScript code to make the box go up and down.
And so that resulted in, I remember that time, there were hundreds of different scroll bar implementations, all of which had slightly nuanced different interactivity, and so it was very difficult to use. And I think some of that didn't reflect well on Flash because it started to feel like it wasn't easy to use. And that was really due to the complete freedom that people have in designing whatever they like, which is really liberating. But for common elements like scroll bars, it can be annoying. It's a waste of time to have to build it yourself. And from a user perspective, it's not so good. So we introduced components and started really transforming Flash to being used not only for these animations, but for apps. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
This is a big area that I think, Mike, I remember you early on when I first met you were showing me this big application you had built and talking about how complicated it was building your own custom components and putting all these things together. Now that you've been a part of this whole movement of the technologies we're working on, what's your experience been with these?
Yeah, so, you know, I started out with Flash 3, and we were kind of building these small RIA-type things, very difficult. And each release, you know, even though the release, like Flash 4, wasn't focused on building RIAs, but it added some simple scripting, so it made it easier. Flash 5 continued this trend, and, you know, like Kevin mentioned, we saw the community really, you know, taking Flash in directions that we never really expected. And I can remember, you know, being really active in the Flash community, and just being part of this process where the community is discovering all of this. Like, I remember Brandon Hall, you know, posting, you can use a movie clip, can be an object, it can be an instance, and, like, all, you know, open up this whole new world. And then that was about the time that I joined Macromedia. So it's kind of interesting seeing this discovery going on in the community and then coming into Macromedia and seeing this awareness of what the community was pushing and the direction they were driving Flash. And seeing this awareness blossoming inside the company and how, you know, trying to figure out how to act on it and how do we, you know, make it a better RIA tool and how do we drive the product and still stay true to our core. So it was an awesome time, you know, all this discovery, all this cool stuff happening and really changing, you know, what was possible on the web.
Mm-hmm. I remember one of the websites at the time that really started changing perception on this was a reservation page for a hotel. Mm-hmm. It's called the Broadmoor Hotel, which I've demoed endlessly. And it really represented the shift in how people were using Flash. And we used to joke that it was really hard to build those at the time. So you had to do everything from scratch, like Mike was saying. And we're like, you know, often you'll say it takes a rocket scientist to do this. Well, we found out that the guy who actually built the Broadmoor Hotel app was actually a rocket scientist from NASA who stopped working at NASA and decided to do web development. So it was true at the time you had to be a rocket scientist. So our goal was how to enable a lot of people to build these things much more efficiently than it was possible to do at that time and really support that direction. So you could actually see in the history of Flash authoring a number of different approaches that are trying to grapple with that direction and figure out how to support it well. And, you know, we improved script editing, introduced components. There were a lot of things we did in Flash authoring. One of the things we realized, though, was that fundamentally building a Flash-rich Internet application was sometimes you didn't want to think about things like the timeline or the interactive media elements of Flash when building those. Of course, if you already understood that stuff, it didn't get in your way. It wasn't a problem. But for new developers, that was a challenge for them. And so it took us a while to really get our heads around that and realize, you know, we really need to take a fresh approach at this and add an additional way to create Flash applications in addition to the Flash authoring tool. So that's what really started the Flex revolution inside of Macromedia and the establishment of an XML language for defining a rich Internet app UI and the Flex Builder authoring tool, which we took a couple of shots at. And with Flex Builder 2 now, we've just done, I think, a tremendously great job building on Eclipse and having a really strong tool for building rich Internet apps.
Yeah, I think it was a difficult time because the people who are really driving this, you know, the community members, these are all people who use Flash, and they're familiar with working on this timeline-based metaphor. And, you know, we saw this as, like, this could be a lot bigger, and, you know, we really want to expand that to other developers. And so we kind of had to balance this against, you know, do we make the Flash IDE the IDE for other developers have difficulty? And I think once we finally came around to the conclusion that, you know, we need to split up, you know, two different products, something like Flex Builder that's really focused purely on development, and then Flash IDE, that's when it really took off and we could have a, you know, really optimize the experience.
There's a lot of questions coming in about ActionScript 3, Mike. People are asking, is ActionScript 3 very different from ActionScript 2, and is it going to be hard to learn for somebody who's already learned an earlier version of ActionScript?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. Underneath the hood, ActionScript 3 is completely rewritten. The virtual machine is rewritten from scratch. But the syntax actually isn't that much different. And if you're familiar with ActionScript 2, then ActionScript 3, the learning curve, there's a very small learning curve. There's some minor syntax changes, but it's mostly additions, new functionality, new keywords, things like that. So that the actual transition on the surface is fairly easy, even though underneath it was completely rewritten from scratch.
So some people are also asking, how do they get ActionScript 3 and start playing with it? There's currently on labs.adobe.com, we've released a early alpha version of the next release of the Flash authoring tool. It's called the Flash Professional 9 ActionScript 3 Preview. It's available to anybody who has a copy of Flash Professional 8. You can download that for free. And it allows you to start working with and compiling ActionScript 3-based content and targeting the new version of the Flash Player, Flash Player 9. And, of course, all of that will be rolled into the final release next year of the next version of the Flash authoring tool. For Flex, Mike, is ActionScript 3 in Flex now, and how do they get access to that?
Yes, if you want to play around with it today with Flex, or even if you just want to play around with ActionScript 3 and not even use Flex, you can on Flex Builder, download a trial. Flex Builder has full support for ActionScript 3-only projects, also Flex projects, but there's also a free Flex SDK that you can download that contains the Flex framework, but it also contains a command line compiler that can compile just ActionScript 3 projects in addition to Flex projects. So if you want to play around with it, you can do it for free today and by just downloading the free SDK.
And that's terrific. And our hope is that that's going to lead to really wide adoption of Flex as a programming model for building rich Internet applications that is free like many other frameworks and technologies in the world today. And we think it's from what I've seen from people who have been using it, it's a super productive way of doing this. I'm really impressed at how simple the team has made what could be a very complicated situation.
There's a question about running the Flash Professional 9 ActionScript 3 preview that I mentioned that's on Labs. And you can install that and run it and still keep Flash Professional 8 running. They run completely separately, so it won't mess up your Flash Pro 8 install. I will warn, though, this is alpha software, so be very careful what machine you install it on if you're doing production work. We don't. It's up there for you to play around with and to start learning ActionScript 3 now, but it's by no means final. There's another question about Flash 9 for Mac OS X, and I assume that's probably could be a variety of different questions. The ActionScript 3 preview on Labs that I mentioned is available for OS X. It is not yet universal binary optimized for the new Intel-based Macintosh. It will run on OS X on a Mactel machine, but it's not in universal binary form. That is a plan for the future. It's just not available yet. With regard to the Flash Player, Kevin, what's the status on a universal binary version of the Flash Player 9?
Sure, yeah. For a second, I thought that's what you were talking about. There is one today. It's available for people who are using it in preview form right now, and we're just finishing up the final one right now, so it'll be out shortly.
Excellent.
Yep.
And so I actually have a question, and on that line, what about Linux? What about Linux Player? Because this is something that comes up a lot, and, we've traditionally supported Linux.
Yeah, Linux Player is really important because we want to make sure that content can play across operating systems. And Linux is starting to become more popular as an end-user OS in addition to its kind of a history of being a server OS or device OS. So as that starts growing, Linux is going to become even more important to us. But certainly right now, most customers, most people on the web are using Windows and Macintosh, but Linux is growing. And so we're making sure that we get the Linux Player out there for people, for Flash. And we have currently Flash Player 7 available for Linux today. And rather than doing 8, we skipped right to 9. So we're currently working on Flash Player 9 for Linux. And actually, one of the developers is blogging about that online. So if you want to check in on how it's going, he's talking about it live with people. And we also have Reader, Adobe Reader, available for Linux as well. So both technologies are on Linux.
Excellent. Let's move on to our next topic. And this is, I know, a favorite of Mike Chambers and Kevin. And myself, actually, this is an exciting project.
apparently Adobe is trying to go to the moon or something. What's this Apollo thing, Kevin?
Well, Apollo is a code name for a new client runtime that we're developing. And this is a technology that we're working on to enable web applications to run outside the browser on your desktop. So right now, if you're using a web application, you have to be online, you have to be connected to the net to use that application. Wouldn't it be great if you could actually save some of those to your desktop and have them be first-class desktop applications? I've actually got a little demo of what that might look like. Switch over to that here. I'm going to share my screen so you can see it. Okay. See my screen here in a second. All right. So this is I'm currently I have a Windows laptop here with me, and I'm going to go to a website, Firefox, and this particular website is a site that lets me play songs. And so you can see here a user interface for choosing different songs. This is actually built with Flex, and it's running in the Flash player. And I can choose a different song here and play it. Like here's Interpol. I can play that here online. So you can see it's a little fun music player app. You can play a bunch of different tunes. Now, I have to actually be online and communicating with this website in order to run this application. And you can see I've got a lot of browser Chrome as well around the top of it here. It would be nice if I could actually keep this on my machine. So I've actually already saved this on my computer, so I'll show you what that looks like. On my desktop, I have an icon that's called Apollo Tunes. And I can double-click that, and it runs an application. It appears on my screen here. And you can see it's that same application that we saw inside the browser is actually running as a desktop application. So exactly the same Swift. It was built with Flex, running in the Flash player, same technology, but hosted as a desktop application. And this is what the Apollo runtime is enabling, is hosting these applications in Flash, also enabling HTML, AJAX techniques to be used to build these applications, and PDF. And this still works. I can choose that same song here and press play, and it will play here over the net. So you can see it still works too as a full application. And these still have access to web information, so I can do HTTP requests and get new data. I can stream in like cover art that you see here or links to related music. So it can support web services or any sort of technologies you'd use on the web to build a web app. But these are now desktop apps. They also show up on Windows in the bar at the bottom. You can see I can minimize that application or expand it again. On OS X, this could appear in the dock as a dock icon. It can appear on the desktop on Linux. It even shows up in the start menu. If I go and run applications, I can launch it right from the start menu. And it's an add-remove program. So it's really a first-class desktop application built with web technologies. So that's what we're working to enable here with Apollo. Let me switch back to the Breeze Room here.
While Kevin's doing that, Mike, when will this Apollo thing be available on labs for people?
Right, so we're working, you know, this is all in pretty early stages. We're just doing our first couple internal milestones. But the goal is to have a release on labs. That'll still be an early version. It won't be feature complete. But to have a release on labs by the end of this year. And so, you know, there's a pretty active conference season. We have Max coming up. So you can imagine there's a lot of good opportunities for us to get that out.
And how is this different than Centrals, a few people have asked?
Sure. Well, Mike and I both worked on Central as well as a couple of the engineers in the team. And Central was an experiment we did a few years ago to start learning about what it meant to host Flash applications on the desktop. And at the time, Central supported only Flash. So we learned a lot of things from that, which was our intention of doing it. And some of the things we learned were that it shouldn't be just Flash. It should also be HTML. And so we have definitely embraced HTML with Apollo. And now that we're with Adobe, of course, PDF is a prime element of this, too. And so that was one of the things we learned. Another was the brand of Macromedia at the time, or Central, really was too prominent in that application. We really want to enable everyone to have their own brand be prominent. And that's something that is really valuable about Flash on the web today. And we went too far creating our own user interface around Central. So with Apollo, we've backed off that completely. We don't have really any UI in Apollo except for the install experience. And all the user interface that you see, like that music app, was designed by a Flash developer. So You can have any sort of window frame or UI you want. You can choose to have the OS user interface around the window if you'd like to. But we think many people are going to want to design their own. And you can have it be any shape you want to, actually, rounded corners or stars or moons, whatever you want. So you can have a lot of latitude in that. So those are some of the things we learned. Also, Apollo is going to be free. There's no special licensing around it or anything like that. It's just like the Flash player or reader, so it can be widely deployed.
Yeah, I think we've learned a lot in regards to Apollo from Central, but I think it's really important to talk about how much we learned about the Flash player in Central, because Central we really pushed it to the edges and really learned, like, you know, we need to do some significant work on the player to really get to the level we want.
That's right, Mike. Yeah, and that was built on Flash Player 6 at the time, and we're at 9 now, of course. And one of the things we learned is that when we were building really ambitious applications in Flash, which Flash Player 6 was kind of the first one to start doing that with rich internet apps, and we learned that ActionScript execution wasn't fast enough, uses too much memory. There were some other limitations like that. So we actually took the team and had them work on the Flash player. So like Ethan Malasky and some others worked on actually improving the core Flash player so we can come back around again and try this again. And so Flash Player 9 is the result of that. That was about almost 3 years of work. And that was completely re-engineering the virtual machine in the Flash player. So ActionScript 3 is actually running on a new VM, and it uses a technique called just-in-time compiling, or JIT, to actually convert ActionScript to native code in your computer. So it runs super fast. Also uses less memory overall than the previous player. So I think we've now built an incredibly strong foundation for really running these rich internet applications in the web, but also now we're able to bring that outside the browser with Apollo.
How is somebody asked, how is Apollo different from some of the third-party tools like Zinc, which I think are pretty much Flash-specific?
Right. So that's actually a good question. Something that's been coming up more and more as we've talked more and more about Apollo. The main difference is that Apollo is a runtime. So a lot of these other tools, which are really cool tools really enable a lot of functionality, but they're creating native executables, so like an .exe or an app file on Mac. Well, we're building a runtime which gives us some advantages it basically allows us to have a much lower level integration between all the technologies in Linux desktop. So you can imagine, Apollo is going to support Flash and HTML content, and we can integrate those on a very, very low level. So you can do things like, talk to your HTML DOM directly from Flash, or have JavaScript and ActionScript communicate together, on a level much lower than external interface, just as if they're native APIs. So we can have very, very close integration with the technologies, but also with the desktop. It also enables us to provide a more consistent user experience for the end users, with the integration with the desktop and across operating systems.
I think one of the most important things that we're doing here is that the applications you build to run in Apollo, you just build with web technologies and you distribute as SWIFTs or HTML files or PDFs, and you don't have to create an .exe wrapper, an executable wrapper for Windows or for Mac. You don't have to take that step. Something we've seen is that with that approach, if you have to make the wrapper yourself, some will choose only to make the Windows wrapper. And so that will lead to not enabling the applications to run across all people's computers who are connected to the web. So I think the approach we're taking with Apollo is unique in that way, in that you don't have to wrap your application ahead of time with a native code. We do that actually at the last minute when it's being installed. So it's a really clever approach, and I think that's going to enable these to really, really run across OSs without having to have any special work by a developer. It's also important to note that these are running still in a secure sandbox. So just like Flash in the browser, there are limitations around what these apps can do from a user's perspective. And in Apollo, a user may be able to give an application permission to access, like, the file system, but it's still contained in a secure sandbox, and users have full control over these applications.
Great. So we're nearing our end, and I wanted to jump into one of my favorite topics, and I think I'll ask Mike to talk about this one. I think Mike really responsible for creating
Macromedia's policy around designer and developer relations and getting started with corporate blogging. In fact, I think you were one of the first corporate bloggers out there.
John Dowdell and I had the first blog.
Yeah, I was reading through a book on the birth of blogging, and you and John were actually mentioned in that book. What's the impact been from the Flash community? What impact has the Flash community had on the development of Flash over the years?
I think, Flash has always had a very robust community, and I think one of the most active and passionate communities anywhere online. And, we always had people from the Flash team participating. So, like, Matt Wobensmith was always very active, even before I came to Macromedia. And then when I came to Macromedia, I was a developer, but I was in this position now where I had access to everyone, and, like, we could talk to people and, provide this feedback. And it was really interesting. We touched on this a little earlier about, RAAs, how the community would consistently push Flash in directions that we would never imagine. So a lot of times we were really following them, where they were telling us where they wanted us to take them and by leading the way. So, at first that was kind of indirect, and then over, we got a little more savvy about this and really tried to tap into that. And we did that in a lot of ways, early on through betas and advisory boards. And then we became more and more open and talking to the community and asking them directly, what type of things do you want? How can we implement this? To the point where when we were working on the Ellipsis release, we're asking them feedback, the open community, not just the beta, but on individual bugs. Like, how should we fix this? How do we need to fix this? And I think it's something that the company really embraced, and we really reaped the benefits from it, and being more active part of the community.
A lot of people have been asking that are in the chat today. Have been asking about how do they get started with Flash. What's a good way to really break into this stuff?
Oh yeah, there's so many resources. I think the first thing to start out is go to our website. We have an excellent designer and developer center for all levels, and for all if you're a designer and want to create animation content, it's all free. If you're a developer, there's content targeted at that. I think another thing to look at is we have a very, very active user group community that's locally based around the world. So, find out where your local user group is.
They can do that on our website,
right?
Also,
you can find information on our website and attend the user groups, and you can meet other developers and other designers learning content. It's excellent. You can ask questions. And the final thing is just get involved in the community, start playing around with stuff, don't be afraid to ask questions. I think we have one of the most active and robust communities, centered around a spirit of sharing. So it's an excellent resource for learning Flash.
Two final questions that I'll ask Kevin to close with. One of them is regarding being part of Adobe now. Now that Flash is part of Adobe, is anything changing about what we're doing with Flash, and what's the future look like for Flash?
Sure. Well, yeah, I would say Flash was really the core thing that brought Macromedia and Adobe together, the opportunity to really grow that even more than we had done previously at Macromedia. And so that's absolutely happening. There's a lot of ways that we're able to connect across all the software now at Adobe. Already you're starting to see that a bit with things like Premiere being able to support Flash video. There's a whole lot more of that we can do and that we are doing, as well as for the support of the growth of Flash technology over time. We've got more people working on more projects around Flash than ever before now. We're enabling this new project codenamed Apollo that we had started a bit at Macromedia, but I think it's going to be much, much bigger and much more successful given the reach and the resources of Adobe to really help support a new endeavor like that. So I'm really excited to be here, and I'm also excited that we've kept, again, the soul of Flash alive and the same, and we're just as connected as ever to the community, and the dynamics of Flash are as healthy as far as I can tell, and that's been a real focus of ours, and we're gonna keep focusing on that.
And the final question that I'm glad you have to answer, because I don't think I could answer it. Somebody asked, way back when we brought Flash into the company, did we ever imagine that it would become as big as it is today?
No. We were hopeful, we were optimistic, but at the time that we were doing that, we were doing all kinds of different things around interactive media, and we had many plugins, there were many other web players out there, and we did our best to do great work in Flash, but I would say the
the reach that we have today is something that we never thought we would actually really achieve. I remember when we were talking about it in the early days, one of the visionary goals that I'd set up was we want to have Flash be like GIF on the web. You know, it's like any other image format to be as reliable and as usable as that. I think we've actually achieved that. Like that was a stretch goal, but we were actually there. I'm amazed. And the other thing that's happening now that we never thought would happen is the rate that we can update the Flash player is unprecedented. There's nothing else in the world that can be updated so quickly. It's the most widely distributed client technology on the internet today, and we can update it. You know, in 3 months, we're going to have 50% of people on the web on the new Flash Player 9. There's not any other technology in the world that can do that today. That was not even something that we imagined would be possible. So that is solely due to the popularity of people using Flash on the net that pulls the installs. And so I just want to give my heartfelt thanks to everyone who's using Flash today, from the team and myself and everyone who's working on the technology here, because it's really all of you that keep us going every day and really drive what we're doing here and inspire us. And, you know, we're really excited whenever we see new work happening in Flash. We send it around to each other. It's thrilling to see what people do with this, and that's what keeps moving it forward. That's the engine of Flash.
Okay, well, on that note, thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Mike Chambers. Thank you, Eric Whitman, for participating and sharing all of this information. There are still a lot of questions that we weren't able to get to because of time. A couple of us will hang out for a little bit and see if we can reply to a few things through the chat room. But at this time, we want to thank you again, and we're going to close down the call. Cindy, I'll turn it over to you now.
Operator, can you please conclude today's call? That does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation, and have a great day.